Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Stephen the Warman Reich's Kickfighting Podcast Show. I'm your host, Stephen the Warman. You are listening to this podcast in one of two ways. Either you're at my blog, which is lordgaul.podbean.com, or you're on the most efficient way to get the podcast. Just enter Warman Kickfighting Show into the iTunes search engine, and the show pops right up. So, got a big show today. I'm going to do results, and I'm also going to break into the series that I was telling you guys. It'll be a two-parter for which is officially my 300th episode on iTunes. For those of you who've been following me, you know I've been doing this show for a long time, and I've got more than 300 episodes because when I first started, I was doing it on Mega Upload in the late 2000s, 2008, 2009 period. But I wanted to do something special because iTunes 300, that's a lot of episodes, and it's pretty cool. So first and foremost, we got to get into the action because we had high-level kickboxing and Muay Thai all over the place. I will go ahead and start us off with ONE Championships and their Edge of Greatness card. I'll go from the bottom up. Liam Nolan gets a victory over Brown Panas. Liam Nolan is an English fighter, and this kid is good. He's very, very talented. He's got good boxing. He's got good rhythm to his kicks. The style that you mostly see in England is the Thai game. They like playing the game. They like to play on the front foot, but there's a little bit more aggression in Nolan. He could play that game, but he also has got a good combo flow when he wants to. Brown Panas is a solid fighter that I kind of put more in the career journeyman role. Like, there's nothing about him that I say this guy's future champion. You know, like, I just, you know, fence to him, I don't see that. I just see him as a really good fighter who will always struggle against elite names, but will also give them a good test and go the decision. So Brown Panas was good in going the distance, but Liam Nolan really showed some good skill, and shout out to him and the things that he's doing, and also K1 Anoop, who just did a documentary on him, so check that out too. But Liam Nolan gets the victory. Tran Duy Ngoc Nguyen gets a head kick KO with the right leg over Kuya Watanabe. Tran's another person in that mold. I think he's a good fighter, not a great fighter, but everyone loves the great KO. He's a talented guy. I'm excited to see him go against a little bit tougher opposition, but I don't like his chances against some of the better guys. But I do think that he's a good fighter, and this head kick KO was mean. Go check it out if you can find it on Instagram, or on Twitter. Peshmor Kot, Pichin D Academy, gets a victory over Charlie Peters, a knockout by knee in the second round. Peshmor Kot has had quite the year. We're talking about a guy who technically beat Georgia Petrosian by the judges, and then they had the whole situation where, I've talked about it many times in the show. He wins, beats him by, decision. I did think that Georgia Petrosian won, but beat him by decision. They then reversed the decision, and first Georgia Petrosian said, oh, that's because he abused the clinch rule. And then Peshmor Pichin D Camp put out the video that set showed they never broke it. They never held on for longer than 3 seconds, and they didn't clinch that much. So after that, then the president comes out and says, no, I don't know where that came from. You guys were all wrong about the knee rule. The real reason why was because Pichin D won under Muay Thai rules, and Georgia Petrosian won under kickboxing rules, and this was a kickboxing fight. So we're going to do the fight again. And then, of course, Peshmor Kot jumped out of the tournament, in very Thai-style fashion. They got more money, and then they went out and fought, and he ended up losing. So then this is his bounce back, and he gets a victory over English's Charlie Peters. Charlie Peters has not had the best run in ONE Championships. It's not that he's not a talented fighter, but just matchup-wise and the guys that he's met, he was also a little inconsistent when he fought outside of England. But, after the Liam Harrison fight, I really thought that he was the guy. The one to follow. Well, let's see what the future brings, in particular the way he won it, because he focused on the boxing a little bit more. But his run in ONE, I believe he's 0-3, so it just hasn't been what he thought it would be. Still working hard. They'll still continue to give him opportunities, but Peshmor Kot, full rules Muay Thai, he brought that heat. He gets the victory. The last fight I want to talk about in this card, because again, I just focused on Muay Thai and kickboxing with my podcast. Ngoc Oa Gayagadao gets a victory over Samapech Fairtex. He had two knockdowns in the fight. There's one where he scored some aggressive boxing, got in close, and started firing uppercuts. I want to say, as a right-hander, he was doing it from the southpaw stance, and he was, sliding him right through the guard for the first knockdown. And the second one was just, he feinted, he moved his feet into position, and he dropped a right hand right down the pipe. Kill job as it landed perfect on Samapech. Nong-O, every time I see him fight, and he's an older guy, but, you know, he's just so dominant, so athletic and fast. He's one of those people where it's like, when you hear Joe Rogan talk about Muay Thai, he'll bring up Sanchai a lot, and he'll say they're not the same level. He says, there's levels to this. These guys don't breathe the same air. You know, this is not the same. It's just one of those things for me, you know, I think about Pusha T's lyric, and Cassius ain't worried about your swings. Like, literally, this guy, a lot of people in combat sports will say, because I do this discipline, if that champion reflects this discipline, we do the same things. No, you don't. Because you throw football in your backyard, does not make you an NFL player. Okay? Because you can make baskets on your driveway, does not mean you are the same as LeBron James. These things are not done the same just because you're on the mat and they're on the mat. There are differences to this. Nong-O, at this stage in his life, is still very different than anyone that you've ever known doing Muay Thai. He's a special, special, special fighter. And he really put on a dominant performance. Just the power and the confidence that he brings. He is just absolutely amazing. So shout out to him and the good things that he's been doing in combat sports. I've got two glory cards to break down and a K1 card. I'll go ahead and jump into the glory card. I'm going to start with Glory 71 that took place on Friday night. It was, of course, you guys know I work in the talent ops department for Glory Kickboxing, so I'm really just going to talk about the results and go straight through it. Justin Moss gets a victory over Kutchlong by split decision. Kutchlong showed, he took the fight on, you know, real short 1 week notice, and he really showed good work with the left leg in boxing and space. Justin Moss, not as what you would call your classically skilled guy in terms of his combination and low kick flow, hands and feet dance that we do in kickboxing. He didn't really show a lot of that, but he really is a talented guy a tough guy who is game to fight anybody that there is out there. And I'm always pleased to see him compete and pleased to see the good things that he does, as far as going out there and putting his heart out there in the fight sport. So he gets a victory in a split decision, and that was the opener on the fight card. Arthur Sorcer gets a victory over Matt Zilch in the unchallenged fight of the night for me. There was another contender a little bit later, but this one really, really brought it. Arthur Sorcer is a talented guy with a good resume, and Matt Zilch had a huge amateur resume, and this was his first pro opportunity. Really, this fight just kind of came down to, what do you like? Do you like the power shots, or do you like the volume? I thought Matt Zilch came out with awesome combos, stayed right in the pocket, combinations and kicks really showed good work. Arthur Sorcer also decided to fight the phone booth with him. When Arthur would score, there was a little bit more pop to it. When Zilch would score, there's a lot more activity to it. Came down to a split decision. Zilch scored more in the rounds as far as the total scores. But, man, as far as the bigger scores, in particular the third, Sorcer was able to score some big shots. So just kind of came down to what judges liked, and they decided by split decision that they liked Sorcer's work just a little bit more. But Zilch, man, he's a very talented guy. Excited to see the futures for both guys. They're very, very good. Tom Jenkins gets a victory over Andrew Navickas. Navickas came out and found his range, got into position, was able to let his hands go. Jenkins was playing the game slow, looking for his moments. He shot a right hand that scored right behind the ear that scored the first knockdown against the Vickas. And then the next round, a series of shots towards the ropes. Then later in the round, a series of shots towards the ropes scored a knockdown, and that got him the KO. So it was really a... it's just kind of how this sport works. I thought Andrew Navickas in his glory debut showed some good talent and space and really battled back. And he could have stayed down after that first knockdown and he battled through. But Tom Jenkins, the last time he fought in glory, he was stopped by Matt Baker. And it's one of those things where it's like, what do you do after the worst thing happens to you? You know what I'm saying? You never want to lose by KO loss. Is that the end of it for you? Jenkins went back to the gym, put the work in, motivated. He mentioned the death of his father recently, and he just wanted to make sure that he won in this night. Tom Jenkins went out there, got the KO, got his hands raised. Congratulations to Tom Jenkins, and we'll see what's next for him moving forward. Also, Andrew Navickas, good job in representing Chicago. Alina Pereira gets a victory over Crystal Lawson. I have broken this down before. Sometimes, and it's happened to me as a coach, sometimes the first shot you take is the worst shot. And Crystal Lawson came in, looked for the inside low kick, probably thinking she was going to score a quick one and move out of the way. But Pereira was already sitting on the right hand, scores clean. So then the first shot had Crystal in trouble. You could see behind how tight she was trying to hold her guard to her head that the first shot really did score well. After that, a couple more knockdowns, and she wasn't able to get herself back into the fight. We'll see what happens with Alina Pereira. You know, her debut in Miami was a, you know, not the most aesthetically pleasing fight, but this fight she came out just looked like everything was clicking. You know, she is the sister of the champ, and she really put on clean kickboxing, and she got a big victory here. So we'll look to see what happens to her down the road. Nick Chastain gets a victory over Seijo Amazaki. Tough style to deal with. Amazaki switched stance a lot, played with different things, rolling thunders and sidekicks and so on. Chastain took his time, played with the body kick, boxed in space, low kick here and there. Didn't get into his usual flow, but he gets the victory after two rounds. Amazaki retired on the stool. He's an older gentleman who, you know, took this fight very short notice. So he went out there, you know, gave it his best effort. Nick Chastain, a veteran in glory now. He's been here with us for 2 years. He's gotten wins. This year alone, he's 3-0. Chastain just wants to keep rolling, you know. And next year, he's been very open. I want a top 10 opponent. He had one scheduled, and then just, you know, things happened and didn't work out that way. So good stuff for Chastain. He moves forward. Arkadiusz Wozniacki gets, I believe it's called Zorsek, excuse me, gets a victory over Demario Dennis by low kicks in the second round. I think that for the first minute and a half, 2 minutes of the round, Demario Dennis was right there in terms of combination and kick flow. His punching power didn't match what Arkadiusz did, but as far as getting into the flow of the combos and the low kicks, I thought that he was right there with him. Arkadiusz, of course, more veteran, fought out there in Europe. The class did show over time. It's one of those things where it's like if Dennis had been doing kickboxing and winning kickboxing and fighting kickboxing fights, you would see him do a little bit better against some of these European guys who at some periods of times in their careers, they've had 8 to 9 fights in a year. It's hard for any American to catch up to that. But Dennis, who was originally supposed to be fighting Junior Tafa, took the fight, you know, pretty much on the new opponent on 4 days' notice, and he put up great effort. Arkadiusz really showed some solid combo to low kicks. He played the game really well. He punched effectively. Not the hardest puncher in the world. Solid, clean puncher, but not a killer puncher. But he was able to get into his combination of low kick flow very well. And he scored 3 knockdowns with the low kicks. So we will see what happens. He's now got his first glory win after losing to Benjamin Adegbuyi in the tournament a couple years ago. Or what was it, about a year ago. Lewontey Nelson comes out and beats Amari Diedrich. Again, take the fight on, you know, 7-8 days' notice. But Lewont is always in the gym, always getting better. Very supportive family. I've talked to them several times. I love to hear from them, you know, and how excited they are about Nelson and getting behind him. He's just down to fight anybody. And he stays in the gym, and he went out there. And Diedrich showed an awesome explosive combination style with a lot of body kicks and high kicks in round one. And then round two, Althea Nelson got the boxing going, got the kicks going in space, really suffocated, has really good. Nelson's not the best athlete in terms of running and jumping, but in terms of finding his offense, he's really, really good. He scored a knockdown in the second round with the boxing, and then he was able to win round three convincingly as far as total scores goes. Amari Diedrich, you know, it's about the next opportunity. You know, sometimes it just doesn't go your way. He won his glory debut. I mean, he struggled in the last two, but, you know, that's the fight game. Laurent T. Nelson, LT, good win for him because he had two fights in a row where you can really make the argument that he could have won the fights, but he just took too long to get going. I think the knockdown that he suffered against Jonsi really, really could have put out a lot of other guys, but he really went back to the well and dug deep, and he fought great, and he won the third round there. And then against Shang Meng. I'm trying to remember the name of the Chinese fighter he fought at the beginning of the year off the top of my head, but same thing. He got going in round two, and he dominated round three. So it's just kind of he gets going later. So if he develops a game and he starts getting going, you know, not necessarily in the beginning of the first round, but the second half of it, we could really see some good things from Nelson moving forward. But good win. Michael O'Meara gets a victory over Malik Watson. Watson came out, had a pretty solid first round, but he's a smaller guy for the weight class. And Lemaire just over time just kept battling through, landing body kicks, landing boxing, getting into the clinch, suffocating Watson from getting his open in-space game going. The final cards read 30-27 and then 29-28 in the other two. Lemaire has been winning and doing well in glory for quite some time. Watson, he's a little disappointed, you know, but I think we will see what happens for his career if he moves down to 154 because he weighed 170 pounds on fight day. So it just shows that he didn't balloon up to anything. He's fighting as walk-around weight. So we'll see what the future holds for both. Benjamin Adebowi gets a victory over D'Angelo Marshall in a very entertaining fight. Marshall committed, stayed in the pocket, had some explosive moments in round one. Benjamin Adebowi was pretty much on cruise control. Found low kicks in space, found boxing in space. Then he fires just the sneakiest uppercut that scores in D'Angelo Marshall, and he goes down. Marshall shook off the shot, and there was just enough time in the round to... just enough time to get out of the round for Marshall. And then when round two started, even though the better outclassing scores came from Benjamin Adebowi, D'Angelo Marshall was right there, you know. And it's in the past, you know, you've heard people wonder about, okay, what's his mentality when he gets hit with a shot, when he goes down to some of these guys? Does he have that thing in him, that dog, as some people say, to battle back? And I think he really showed it in this one. Like, I liked watching the rapport between him and his team, you know, after the fight. He really did want to get back into the fight and win it. Just Adebowi was just had the right defense. Adebowi has an exceptional kickboxing guard. Like, it's tight, and he blocks a lot of things that come its way, even when they're thrown heavy. He can block both sides. He's a very, very good fighter. Just really, really talented. So good stuff in that fight. Tiffany Mansuse against Vanessa Mexen. Close cards again, but this time 48-47 twice and 49-46 for Tiffany Mansuse. It's one of those, depends on your angle. You know, I had some people, you know, if I looked at Twitter, a lot of people felt that Vanessa Mexen had won and had won, you know, with a 49-46. Some other people like Tiffany's work. One thing that really did help Tiffany on the cards is early in the fight, there was a clinch position where she's pushing the head away. And I think Mexen was waiting for the ref to come in and get a break. And when that didn't happen, Tiffany lifted up her knee and she scored it right on the high cheek, which left that eye swollen. So even though she had to deal with that and fight with it for the whole fight, the trouble with it is if you're trying to make an argument for each person in the round, sometimes they lean on the damage part. And even though one shot was the reason why you had that damage, anytime the other person scores, they're going to see it as, okay, that's what's doing it. It's Tiffany's boxing. It's that kick that landed. It's, you know, that kind of stuff. So Mexen did a good job scoring as she always does. Tiffany did a good job of her aggression and her awkward angles. So it really was a pick 'em type of fight. Tiffany Mansuse is your new glory champion, and she beat the girl she couldn't beat, you know. And one of the things that Mexen will work on and her team will work on is they mentioned right after the fight, and they mentioned it, you know, on, you know, several social media posts before it, you know, they weren't as excited about going against Tiffany, but maybe this, you know, because they fought her before and they wanted someone new. But Tiffany mentality was the opposite. Like, I need to get that title. I believe I can beat that person. And she just stayed with it until she got it. So Mexen, she'll be fine. She's still one of the best fighters walking on the planet. She'll be back in title contention because she's that good, you know. But we'll see what happens for both women moving forward. The next glory card I'm going to talk about was the Glory 72 card. We'll do the same thing and work our way from the bottom up. Again, it's one of those things where it's like there are talented fighters all over the place, all over the planet, and luckily in Chicago we were able to put together a pretty good card, and this card had a lot of stoppages and a lot of drama. So Kanat Tassi Bey gets a victory over Ben Acosta by split decision, which is interesting because on Glory 71 opened the card with a split decision with the exact same scores, 29-28 twice for the winner and 30-27 for the loser. Ben Acosta showed good movement in space, good boxing and kicks and side kicks, and like he played within his space and he moved around. Tassi Bey was just more committed to showing that he was a stronger man, walking down Ben, looking for aggressive offense. In the end, two judges preferred Kanat's work a little bit better. He gets his first glory victory and, you know, moves forward as far as his professional career. John King then breaks a record. He has the fastest KO in history of glory as he gets a victory over Tom Matlin. I'd heard it because, you know, my position, I always walk around fighters and I walk around, the camps while they're talking to each other and they're working things out. Like, I just don't even think about it. You know, I just walk around and that's what's going on. I have had several opportunities where I walked by John King in his camp while they were talking about their game plan. And they kept saying over and over, he's really good at kicks. Stuff him. Make sure you're in space. Make sure you're close. Make sure you're throwing offense and don't be in space. If you're ever in space, rush back into being in tight. Like, get in there. So he kept saying it over and over. Tommy Maltin comes out, lands a clean body kick. John King threw three hard shots off the body kick, closing the distance, like he said. Tom didn't have enough space to move backwards. Shot landed clean, scores the KO 10 seconds in. King was really, really excited because we're talking about a guy who's come in and he's fought in glory and he's had some good moments, just didn't have that good finish. You know, he fought Chris Camozzi, hurt Camozzi early in the fight, and then there was a ref break because of a headbutt. And then after that, Camozzi had recovered, and King had used so much effort trying to get the stoppage that he burned himself out. So for him to go out there, fight, you know, as long as he has in this job to get that record, I definitely am, you know, happy for John King and the night that he had. And as far as Tommy Matlin goes, you know, he didn't even really get the opportunity to show what he can do. So opportunities will come down the road. You know, he's not a untalented person because of this loss. Opportunities are coming. So good stuff for him and good stuff for King, who has put himself in the glory record books. Even if the record's broken, it doesn't take away from the fact that once upon a time, he stood on top of it. Joe Taylor gets a victory over Derek Laffer. Derek did a good job, I thought, of scoring clean combinations, not the, you know, physically imposing, you know, KO puncher that Taylor brings to the table. But as far as being clean and looking like a person who knew how to do the kickboxing techniques, I thought Derek did a good job of that. The Taylor, who scored in space and was so explosive that when he did throw, he looked like he was able to have good impact. He doubled up on a right hand in the first round, scoring a knockdown over Derek Laffer. Round two, he was able to close the distance again, and the boxing brought about another knockdown and an eventual KO. Joe Taylor was originally supposed to fight someone else, so he was grateful for the opportunity and for the fight. Let his hands go, looked really good, and then, of course, we'll see what happens with him moving forward. But it's just one of those things where it's like Taylor needed this, needed a victory to send a statement to build on, and I think he went out there and did it. Nathan Ward put on an excellent kickboxing performance against Justin Greskowitz. Justin Greskowitz has been in glory for a while, but he's also, most importantly, been in the fight world of kickboxing and Muay Thai for 12, 13 years. He said there was a year, I remember, where he fought, like he said, 9 or 10 times. And he just really, you know, the record of 42-25, probably the most experienced American Muay Thai kickboxer. So I really respect and I'm glad that he put in the effort it took to be one of the better fighters on the planet, one of the better fighters in the States, and he kept putting himself out there and going against tough guys. His glory run has not been what he would have liked. He's gone against tough guys, and he just kept battling through. This weight class is a little bit below his jurisdiction. He's probably better at 147, but he's made the cut down to 43, and he's put on some good fights. He really had some good moments in round one. Just Ward was just the better tactician. Ward was able to score with clean kickboxing in space. His boxing was really good. He had some sneaky knees in there. He had some really good body rips. He scored a knockdown on Justin. He was looking for the stoppage a little bit later in the fight, but Justin, you know, who had been stopped in his previous glory outings, he showed the mental tenacity and the heart that he was determined to go the distance. So it went the distance for him. He loses, but he definitely battled on, and I'm sure it was important to him to go that far. Nathan Ward really put on a good performance. He's a good skilled technical kickboxer, you know, with that Muay Thai style that has just enough kickboxing flavor in it for the crowd to love. So I really like Nathan Ward in his debut. We'll see what happens with him moving forward. Charles Rodriguez gets a victory over Taylor Crawl. The opening fight of, you know, the opening moments of the fight were Taylor's. You know, he has good quick hands and he's got power. He got in the pocket. Rodriguez came out, committed to the low kicks, you know, and he, you know, would eat some punches here and there as he tried to go for them. But Taylor scored one good shot in exchange. He really built on it, let his hands go, looking for the KO. Rodriguez's guard was tight enough, not super tight, but tight enough. Was able to weather the storm. Stirred to have some, success in the clinch. And then at that period of time, Taylor Crawl was not investing in a pummel. He was more keeping his hands inside and looking to punch in between or looking to push away. But Rodriguez was too strong, was able to slow him down with the knees and the low kicks over time. Then at the end of the round, it was just a lot of unanswered knees. Taylor still game to the very end, would throw a shot here and there, trying to, score a KO or a knockdown or turn things around, or even just to buy himself to get out of the round. But Rodriguez stayed relentless on the knees, stayed on them. They stopped this fight with 1 minute or 1 second left in the first round. Charles Rodriguez, always a showman, came out with, Be a Man from the Mulan, Disney movie. And before that, he's got, Backstreet Boys and different, Lion King. But he's just a showman. He puts the effort in to be seen in that way. So good stuff for Charles Rodriguez. Crawl definitely showed good skill, good hand, speed and power. So fun fight for both guys. Sergey Adamczyk gets a stoppage victory over Abraham Vidalis. And again, this is one of those things that you've heard me say in this podcast before. At some period of time, each young fighter has to take a huge step up. Not necessarily the middle step. Sometimes it's got to be the bigger step. Sometimes it's the perfect guy who's, the bridge between you and greatness. You know what I'm saying? Like, sometimes it happens. But the story that you guys will hear me say the most in this is the Stefan Leko story. You always hear me talk about that. Stefan Leko talked about after he beat Badahari in their first matchup, he goes, I know he's a young kid, he's talking trash, and I was talking trash back because of it. He goes, but at 20 years old, he's going against me, and I'm one of the best fighters in the world. When I was 20 years old, I went against Ernesto Hoost. When he told me that real early in my kickboxing career, there's always this understanding of, at some period of time, you got to go out there and fight a guy that kills. You know what I'm saying? Like a guy who's really, really good. And Sergey Adamczyk, former Glory champion, he beat Murat Grigoryan, the current, lightweight champion. Talented guy, had the angles, had the hand speed, and was able to come around the corner of Vidalis. He kept it clean. He was not, sometimes he gets into clinches and he falls in, but Vidalis' technique is so clean where he played with a lot of combinations and high kicks, a lot of combination boxing, some step knees, and really, really aggressive with the right leg. He played with that a lot. The other thing that I really noticed, or that the other thing that I really liked that I saw from Adamczyk as far as adjusting to it, was his commitment to the rear back leg. He was on it. He had a big time low kick. You hear Big Mike yelling in the back, keep going forward. So after a series of shots in the third round, he scored something big. Vidalis ended up going down. Vidalis got to his feet. The ref felt he was not able to go on, and the decision was a TKO called by the ref. Adamczyk did good. Like, he's still a talented fighter. Expect him to go against high-level guys and do well. He can fight, man. And Vidalis, I thought, brought the best out of him, and he brought really good stuff out of Vidalis. Vidalis losing this fight, he's no longer undefeated. No shame there. No shame there. This is kickboxing. Losses happen. He needs to experience that level so that he can grow from it. Adamczyk needs to defeat that type of person so that he can remain where he is. This is the game of combat sports. This is a game of kickboxing forever. We learn from our losses, I think that was a good one. And then also, we have to hold court. I think that that's what you have from Sergey Adamczyk. So good stuff. Bailey Sugden came out, really overwhelmed John Morehouse early, was able to score big shots over the top. John Morehouse never, it's one of those things where it's like, he never got going. At some period of time, you want to get consistent offense. You want to have success. But in the end, when Bailey got him hurt, he stayed on him, scored the first knockdown, got back up, really scored a lot of offense. Morehouse was kind of, wobbling all over the place. Ref stepped in and called it in the first. Good performance by Sugden, who had a really, really tough year and was matched really, really tough between Tom Fairtex and Asa Tampau. He really got matched tough. Had some decisions, not go his way, that he thought that he may have gotten. No matter what, he needed to come out and perform well, and he did so. John Morehouse, end of the career. He's been doing this for 15 years. He asked for the mic real quick, just gave a shout-out to his family, and then he said he was going to retire. So good luck to John Morehouse. Thank you for competing in Glory. I wish you all the best down the road. Bailey Sugden, young man, still has a good future in kickboxing because, like I said, he's a young man, very, very young guy. So I'm excited to see what happens. JD Benezes and Chamonix Soar Tehran. Chamonix came out, won her glory debut, lost to Alina in her second fight. Here, JD Benezes was scoring in spots, but JD was still struggling with Chamonix's, you know, left leg, struggling with the clinch, but JD never stopped pressuring, kept moving forward, kept looking for opportunities, kept banging the drum to the body, and she just kept moving. Then all of a sudden, you can see the body language of Chamonix start to change. Clinch had slowed her down. Chamonix's not the biggest person for the weight class. JD comes in, puts a combination with the left hook to the body, scores it well, came in, 1, 2, 3, lands the body again. Chamonix goes down and they count her out. Big time win for JD Benezes, who really is a talented fighter, but her two fights, you know, in glory have just been the same two people. She fought Tiffany and she fought Anissa, and that's it. Now that you see her fight outside of it, you see that she's a talented girl. She just needs those opportunities. Congratulations to her on her win. Right, Waller then goes out there and defeats Chris Camozzi in one of the most interesting fights you're ever going to see. Basically, what happens is early in round one, Camozzi kind of getting his feel. Riot Waller kind of fights with this string of violence where he'll string together 4 or 5 shots together. Not necessarily wide. Sometimes they just come straight in a weird way. You're not ready for them. They get you hurt and you're in trouble. So he gets it going. After Waller gets it going, with those opportunities, he had a shot that hurt Camozzi, and that Camozzi needed some time to recover. He put together another string of shots, and a high kick came up, scored under the chin, like right on the neck. Camozzi looked like he was out laying on the ropes, and when that happened, the ref came in, I think to protect him, thinking that it was a stoppage, and then he stepped away, and then Waller was looking, going for the kill, then he stepped in again, and then after that, Chris stumbled away from him. And, you know, the ref, it just weird opportunity, weird thing that happened, and he didn't make the 10-8 call. He didn't make the count. He restarted the fight, giving the round to Waller. But Camozzi, super tough, was able to battle back in later rounds. We had a split decision after 3. They go to an extra round. Shout out Chris Camozzi's corner. They were right by me, and they were like, hey, get ready for an extra. We went to the extra round. Riot Waller really started the round extremely well. The middle portion of the round went to the Camozzi, started to get the low kicks going. And then just a gritty performance. They went to a split decision. 2 judges had it for Riot Waller. He pulls off the upset, biggest win of his career. And a guy who normally is a, you know, 187 who moved up. Camozzi was the same, but Camozzi was much bigger than Waller. Good job there for Camozzi and getting up and fighting back after that shot, because it really was a devastating kick. It landed right under the neck. Right, Waller gets the victory. Petch, which has been telling us to be calling him, but Petch Panamarung gets a victory over Kevin Van Oorstrand, gets a majority draw over Kevin Van Oorstrand. That could have been a victory had it not been for a point take in the 5th frame with like 20 seconds left. It was really odd that it came about. I thought they were just going to kind of go to the final bell. He would have taken it on all 3 scorecards. In the end, he had it on 1 scorecard, and the other 2 were made 47-47 due to the point take. You know, again, some styles make fights, and aesthetically this one wasn't the best, but I really do think that there was a lot of good heart and effort put into this. It just didn't go the way that they were hoping that it would, for both guys. But, you know, we go to the scorecards, we get a draw. Kevin Nordstrand, who took this fight on pretty much 2 weeks' notice, he was preparing for someone else. Same thing for Petch, so the victory doesn't go to either guy. It's a draw, but the decision, being the champion still stays with Petch Panamarung. So good stuff for Petch. We now go to the final card, which is the K1 Grand Prix 2019, and it had some violence on it. I mean, there were stoppages all over the place. The glory card, watching the glory card live and then going back to my hotel room and then watching this K1 card just let me know how wonderful kickboxing is and how violent kickboxing is. It really is a different kind of sport. Like, these guys bring it, and they are some of the toughest people on the planet, and they bring hard-hitting KO action all the time. Please forgive me if you guys heard that little glitch that was in there. Sorry, I just had a little glitch. Back to work. as we break down the K-1 card, I won't go through the whole thing. I really want to focus on the tournament. Ieto defeats Kenta Ishibushi on the first round knockout on the end of the card. Kaito Okajima gets a victory over Rikiyu Yumura. That was a unanimous decision. Kazuma Takuda gets a victory over Kaito Yamawaki. That was by knockout. Genpei Sano gets a victory over Kazuma Kubo. Unanimous decision. Shoto Iwa gets a victory over Ryoto. That was a majority draw, that one. Sorry, I had my notes mixed up. Tamo gets a victory over Tetsu. And we get into the tournament. So, Hirotaka Urabe gets a victory over Brandon Spain. Scored a head kick knockout in one of the rounds. Spain actually had some pretty good offensive output in one of the rounds, giving him that round. But all in all, Hirotaka Urabe, also known as the other Urabe brother, him and Koya Urabe, of course, are the one of renown in the K-1 organization. Hirotaka moves on in this tournament. Jawaseye Athaya, the Thai-born fighter, gets a victory over Rico Anpu. Very, very nice setup by, Jasoai. Anyways, I'm running with it. Gets a big-time KO in the first round of their fight. He scored a jumping knee that got Onpu hurt, and then he closed the distance and landed a big hook right after it, scores the KO. Onpu looked like he wanted to try to keep going, but it was a legit stoppage, so Jawaseye goes forward. Yuki Egawa gets the first of a night of body shot destruction as he corners Jorge Varela against the corner, corners him to the turnbuckle area. Let's go. His hands rip to the body with the left hand. Varela goes down, and that was it. I'm telling you, the night that you got from Yuki Egawa, I'm going to talk about it in total, it's what you want to see from the sport. Arthur Mayer gets a KO victory over Ruma Sekio in the second round, and that completes a story of three knockouts and one knockdown and the fight that went to decision in your first round tournament. If that gets your night started off, you know you're in for a good ride. K1's about to deliver. So, Raul Menart gets a victory over Chris Bradford. Bradford, you know, he's an older guy. He was really excited about this opportunity. He's been in the sport for a long time. He just, you know, class comes into play. And Raul Menart was just better than he was. Like, he just was better to the punch, stronger, more confident in his kickboxing. He landed some boxing early. Chris had got hurt. At the point where Chris was hurt, he couldn't even find where Raul was. He was moving himself away, and it was almost like Raul Menart was beating up Chris as he was looking out the ropes the other way. He just didn't know where the shots were after a couple of big ones landed. Flory puts him down. Chris Bradford loses in the first round. I mean, shout out to him. Got the opportunity to go to Japan, you know, fighting the big show. Just Raul Menart, the K-1 champ, you know, a heavyweight, is just another level. That kid is legit. He's very, very good. Good fighter. He's been fighting in glory. Can't wait to see what comes from his future. And, of course, he's got that lineage because his dad, runs the Madero Gym and has been doing it for a long time. I've worked with several K-1 World Grand Prix champions, Bonjowski, you know, Andy Sauer. He's just got a long history. So his son being able to grow up in that, be around the sport, have the size, he's going to be tough to handle for time to come. So shout out there. Daizo Sasaki gets a unanimous decision over Hyota Suzuki. Solid performance there. 29-28 on one of the cards, 30-28 in the other two. Daizo moves forward. Hideki Yamazaki goes out there and he defeats Riku by what I would just simply call a barrage. From the opening bell, he was determined to win by KO. He must have thrown 150 strikes in that minute 24 seconds before he got the stoppage. He just kept putting his hands together, flurries. He did some spinning back kicks. He did some everything, but he never stopped. Riku is one of those moments where it's like, I never got going. You never had a chance. It's almost like there was a race, and the other guy was allowed to start, and you had to wait. It felt like that watching the fight. Like Yamazaki was all over him, and then he cleans it up. He cleans up the performance with a lead leg hook kick KO that just swung around and landed clean, knocking Riku to the ground. KO victory for Yamazaki. I think they called it a TKO because it was three knockdowns. That's KO in my book. I can't wait to put that in the year-end kickboxing highlight. That was some violent stuff. Yamazaki, he's a talented guy, and he's got some wins here and there. He's got an upset here and there. Got a victory over Nori. He's the kind of guy where he'll win or two or three really good, and then he'll take a step back. no consistency from him at the top, but he does put together a couple here and there. This day, this night, he had one goal. Kill the man in front of me, and he did so. Yoshihiro Kido gets another spinning backfist knockdown as he drops Kitsuya Jinbo in the second round. Spinning, you know, it's just, I've seen him score it in so many different ways. There's a subtlety about it. He's just in position, and he knows he's got it, and he just lets it go. So in this particular time, it's not even like it was set up in a combo. He just found himself right on the outside, spins those shoulders, bang, knockdown, gets Jinbo in trouble, goes out, cleans it up with the hands. Big-time KO finish for Kido. One of the most entertaining guys in K1. He really does a good job of promoting himself, the videos that he makes, and he's just one of my favorite people in kickboxing. So shout out to Yoshihiro Kido, who gets a victory here. Just Sayai gets another victory over Hirotaka Arabe in an absolute nuts fight. There was one particular time where Just Sayai goes out there, scores a knockdown in a round, and then as he's going in and looking for the cleanup, Hirotaka Arabe runs him into a right hand and drops him back. Awesome action. The last round, they go to an extra round. The extra round, in my opinion, was cleanly won by Just Sayai. Good stuff by Hirotaka Arabe. You know, I've talked about him on this podcast many times, and there are times where I'm like, where's his focus? He's always step forward, step backwards. He hasn't been consistent since he was bursting on the scene and just killing people at 60 kgs. He hasn't been that guy in a long time. But when he does put it together, I will give him his due. And in the last 2 years, he's been one step forward, one step back. But on this night, even though he lost, I still thought that his form was good. He was game. He just lost to someone better. But Just Sayai moves forward. Hirotaka Arabe, I was definitely proud of your performance tonight. You really put on a good show. Yuki Ogawa gets a victory over Arthur Mayer and what can only be, you know, described as a battle of spinning stuff. Arthur Mayer comes out and does a spinning back hook kick, misses. Yuki Ogawa comes out, does a spinning back hook kick, scores it. Perfect position. Heel goes right into the liver. Down goes Arthur Mayer. They count him out. It just was cool to see because it really is like, you know, dueling banjos type thing where one guy does it and the joke that I crack on Twitter, the Ninja Turtles joke, a fellow checker, goes out there. You want to play nunchucks? I'm the king of nunchucks. Goes out there. You want to play spinning stuff? I'm the king of spinning stuff. Yuki Ogawa goes out there, stops Arthur Mayer to the body. He moves forward in the tournament to meet Just Sayai. Ryo Itake gets a knockout victory over Yang Ji-gyun. Good stuff by Ryo. I need more consistency before you see me really start, selling the fighter. But I thought that was a good KO and a night of KOs. Kusi defeats Seiya Kawahara in what can only be described as one of the most entertaining fights of the year as these brothers was killing each other. They went out there and it's got to be, I don't know what your top 3-5 is looking like for this year. But really, Seiya goes out there determined to get this upset, and he lets his hands go. He just puts on a barrage of offense, and I mean, I'm telling you, feet planted, lefts and rights, letting him go wide, trying to get a KO. Mean, aggressive. No stopping this guy. He was determined to try to go out there and get a stoppage, scores a knockdown. Then all of a sudden, you can start to see it in Cozy's body language. He starts to eat the shots a little bit better, and he starts to try to time in between, score some offense in between. Look to take advantage of the wide shots that didn't have a lot of defense coming from Seiya. So as he's playing this game, he finds this moment, scores the right hand, and Seiya backs out a little bit. Then he lands a combo with a head kick on the end. When the head kick scores, Seiya bends over like he's going to go down, but he doesn't go all the way down. Cozy then comes in and cleans it up with the right hand to score the knockdown. Then he continues to put in a barrage as Seiya just burnt himself out looking for the stoppage early in the fight. Cozy stops it with 1 second left to go in the second round. This fight is crazy. Go out, watch this. Kouzi defeats Seiya Kawahara. Cozy versus Seiya Kawahara. Watch that fight. It is. K1 should have it up. They do a really good job on their YouTube page of getting their stuff up. Go check this out. This fight is insane. They are killing each other. Kenta Hayashi gets a victory over Deika Kaneko by KO. He looked better throughout. Kaneko was pretty decorated. He's got some good history. But Kenta, who it's funny because he's like a light-skinned or bronze-colored, you know, Japanese fighter. He goes out there, land clean offense with the boxing. He scored several knockdowns in the fight. He just seemed like he was in control. And when DK Kaneko tried to battle back, he ran into something big and was hurt again. Kenta was in control from the beginning, did a really good job. He is your victor. Guy I've mentioned in the show before, keep watching Kenta Yashi. Very, very good. Jordan Piquet defeats Casey Kondo in one of the most important fights on this card because I talked about it earlier when I talked about Abraham Vidalis going against Sergey Adamchuk. Something in you, something early in your kickboxing career, you've got to shake the trees a little bit. And there's no greater example than you always hear me say in this podcast over and over and over than when I look at what happened in Thailand when the best fighter in Australia, you know, Paul Briggs, goes to Thailand. He'd gone to Japan, he beat the best guy, and then Briggs goes to Thailand, and then he meets Jamad in a fight. He gets beat by low kicks. And then after the fight's over with, he said, you know, he's like 18, 19 years old. He said, I went to Japan and I beat the best guy in Japan. So I had to go to Thailand to see who the best guy was and see where I stood. Now that I came in here and I got beat, you know, beat up so badly, it was important for me to know that there's something out there better than me. I had to get better. Like, that's the, you know, I'm paraphrasing. The whole idea to it is, at some period of time early in your career, you go against something that's beyond your reach. That is the history of kickboxing. It's not like in boxing where there's just you're groomed with the right opposition and then you've got the right management and they move the right guys in front of you and then you get a bunch of guys who aren't good. Guys are a little bit tougher and you go against a guy who's like an old talent, you know, title holder and you knock him out or something like that. Then you fight for the title or you avoid those kind of guys and you work your way to the title based on how your management moves you. But there is a progress to how they bring you up. In kickboxing, it's almost like win, 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 shock the system. Something in your fight career has to make you go out there and feel different after you compete. You shouldn't just be able to mop up everybody. If you're having success, you won 10-1, whatever the case is. At some period of time, you want to dare to be great. You want to see how you do against someone good. Round one, Casey Kondo is just kickboxing Jordan Piquet's ears off. Jordan Piquet is not the most savvy defensive guy. He's just hard. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's just a hard guy. You punch him, he ain't going nowhere. He's going to walk you down. Whatever your offense throws, PK's walking straight through it. He's the tank of the division of 67.5 kgs. He is the tank of the division. And then what always happens is, not only is he the tank, he can hit. This guy walks you down. He finds his moment for big offense. A counter right at some period of time, put Kondo down. He closed the distance again. An uppercut scored. And then he's able to clean the round out in round two with the barrage in the corner to get Kondo out of there. Jordan Piquet is one of my favorite guys in Japan right now because I know they don't want Jordan Piquet winning in Japan right now. He just keeps beating their guys. They're scoring offense against him. He's just too tough. And the only guy that actually, you know, even looked like he hurt him a little bit was Masaki Nori. But even Nori struggled with the offensive barrage and just moving forward of Jordan Piquet. They're trying to figure that division out because really they're kind of making it. It's got a long history. It's got a long history in kickboxing and Muay Thai. Some of the best guys in the world fought at that weight class and did really well. The only problem that I would say with what's going on right now, it's they probably need a tournament to showcase it a little bit better. Now, again, of course, we know Yuta Kubo's out there and stuff like that, so I'm not trying to take it away from him and what he's done in the past. But they're probably due for a tournament, you know, like maybe they do something at K-Fest or something like that. But we got to crown someone. You know, Jordan Piquet should be walking around with a belt on his waist, not Kubo. No offense to Kubo. But they'll meet one day, and if not, they'll do a tournament, and we'll see how Jordan Piquet does, you know, against the last guy he hasn't gotten a hold of. But he's fought really, really well, and don't rule out Kubo's ability to win that fight. You know, I'd still lean Piquet because he's so strong, or Jordan Piquet. I still lean him, but that should be a really, really good one. Minoru Kimura gets another KO victory over Jordan Valdinocchi. Here's my favorite thing about this fight. Kimura looked like he was hitting a heavy bag. He is the unchallenged, right now, walking the planet, fighter under 140 pounds. Nobody's punching harder than this kid in kickboxing. Nobody. Period. Not even a question, not even in doubt. He lets his, same as Jordan Piquet, like, who cares if you hit me? I know I'm the most powerful guy. Walked him down, scored a body barrage, put Jordan down, and this dude looks like he was hitting the heavy bag. There's that really famous Mike Zambidis highlight where he's like drops his head low and just starts ripping the bag. That's what it looked like he was doing to an actual human being as Minoru Kimura keeps ripping the body up, scores three knockdowns. I'm telling you, every single one of them are beating the drums left to right hands, ripping it, letting it go, scores three knockdowns. Good stuff by Minoru Kimura. Very, very talented guy. Still has defensive lapses, but he brings so many natural things to the fight game. There's a reason why he's on the end of the card. The girls love him. He's got that look about him. You know, he's a Brazilian guy who speaks, you know, fluent Japanese. He's just important to kickboxing in Japan right now. So they got to keep developing him, pushing him, and maybe get him back in the title picture somewhere down the road. But between Crush and K1, they know that there's something with this kid. And even if he loses the fights, because he's lost. You know, he had the upset victory, you know, a few years ago when he beat Fairtex. But since then, since that fight, I mean, Misaki Nori stopped him. Fairtex stopped him in the rematch. He has that in his history. But he also has like 5-6 fights that he's won by KO in a row. That cool thing he does where after he knocks the guy off, he runs over, he walks over to the corner, puts his hands behind his back, and he looks off into the distance as the camera has him and his opponent in the background. He just gets gamemanship. So good job there. The Lord of Violence, Takeru, goes out there and puts on a really good show with Yuta Murakoshi. Yuta Murakoshi was in the Rise tournament. He's a savvy, slick guy. Gave some trouble to Takeru in some spots. Some people wanted an extra round because it was close. But I will say, if the fight was won anywhere, there was a barrage there in the second half of the third round where Takeru just put together one of his, you know, who cares if you hit me type of offensive flows. Takeru was a little bit different. Even though he has the power to start you with one hand, it's usually a gradual beating where he just keeps going offense and you're doing your best to hit him and keep hitting him, but he can care less. He just has it locked in that you got to go. And I think Yuta was doing fine in the early two rounds, keeping it close, scoring offense, being slick. But when Takeru got going, it's just too late, you know. 30-29 on two cards, 29-29 on the other. I like those scorecards. I like that Japan does 10-10 the most because it makes you earn rounds as opposed to just being rewarded them by having two more shots or one more shot than the other person. I thought Takeru came out there, proved why he's one of the best kickboxers in the world, proved why he's one of the most must-see kickboxers in the world. He's just got it. So, of course, that win keeps everything, the balls turning, and, you know, the possibility of him and Nasukawa down the road. We want them to be undefeated when it happens. It may not happen with they're both undefeated, but that's the goal. Takeru gets the win. Yuki Egawa wraps up his night of violence by just going out there and in 1 minute starching Jasayai. Came out, put together a combo, ripped to the body. Jasayai was visibly hurt. Put some offense together, put a low kick in there, and the low kick looks like it hurt Jasayai. Turned him to the side, threw a shot to the side of the ear. He goes down for the first down, still feeling the effects from total body wear on the tournament. Gawa comes up, puts together an offensive flow, rips the body with the left hand heavy. Down goes Josiah, your tournament, your featherweight champion and tournament winner, Yuki Egawa. Here's the importance of this, okay? This is 57 kgs. Number one, big time win, and you stopped all the guys to do it. That's how you make stars in this game. This is a sport where more stars are made off of being violent, you know, after having those kind of stoppage victories. Way more people are drawn to this game when you have a night like that. That makes people want to come back and see you fight again. So now they got to build his brand now. Egawa needs to, we need to bring in a couple more European guys. You know what I'm saying? Go ahead, bring them in, see how he does against those guys. Don't do the hardest guys. Just have him defend his title against some good guys. Set him up for something down the road. Is he going to go against, you know, Takeru on 1 year K-Festa shows? You know, something like that. Is he going to go in that, get himself into conversation for Tenshin Nasukawa? He is around the weight class, so it is something that can happen. But it's very, very important that they build on his brand because K1 had an awesome night of kickboxing and a very, very violent finish by a young up-and-coming star that you want people to gravitate towards. This game is all about who's going to be your star tomorrow. Even though you got a great star now, it's all about who's going to be your star tomorrow. So good stuff there. So I'm going to go ahead and jump into the kickboxing series I was going to talk about. I feel like I won't be doing any justice if I do. This is a 54-minute podcast. We've been going at it. I promise, I'm telling you, I'm going to break down this list. I'm looking at it right now, and I go, man, I don't want to rush through these answers. I want you guys to look at this full, the 25 things that everybody needs to do in kickboxing for the last 30 years, things that you should know, and they have a list of 10 things that I would like to have seen. I was going to make it this podcast, but I just kept hitting you guys with results. There was just too much kickboxing going on. I'm going to go ahead and let this be episode 300. Episode 301 is going to be me giving you that list. Hopefully, me and TJ DeSantis will get together, and we'll be on all the streaming services at that time. But man, I really appreciate you guys for being here, following kickboxing. I hope you like this podcast because I put a lot of time into the film study in this one to give you guys that real breakdown. So shout out to everybody listening. God bless, and thank you for being part of the podcast. Peace.